This is A Story of Sorts, the podcast mostly about bookish stuff. Hello everyone, Karina here. On the second episode of season 2, I've interviewed Ece Görler. Ece is a writer and an artist. She teaches art tutorials on YouTube and Patreon and is the author of Frank, a middle grade sci-fi book. We talk about her experience writing her debut, the joys and challenges of living abroad, how she started a business in 2020, with a few tips for writers and entrepreneurs alike. Have a listen. So we have Ece here with us. I already asked how to pronounce the name just to be sure that I was pronouncing it right, which I wasn't, but it's pronounced Ece. It's very nice to have you here. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast. And I usually ask people I invite over to the podcast to write a little bio so that I can get to know them and what they've done, because there are things I wouldn't find out otherwise. You are Turkish and you moved to the States in 2014. And because I'm an immigrant myself, so I always like to bring people from different backgrounds into the podcasts, I would like to ask you, what do you like the least and what do you like the most about the United States?
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast. I love your podcast. I'm very happy to be a part of it. So good question. I think the first, let's start from the worst so that we finish on a good line. I think the least favorite thing for me is, of course, being away from your own culture that and your friends and family. I know, though, if I go back right now, for example, nothing will be the same either. So it's just kind of this weird dilemma that I'm having all the time. Sometimes I really, really miss, you know, my childhood friends and, you know, my family. I just like, I want my mom, but, you know, it just doesn't happen. But other than that, I think I am missing some really long-term friendships in these states, because states is really huge. And when you think about its size, to give you the kind of idea, Texas is as big as Turkey. So my whole country is as big as one state. So people travel a lot. Once they finish university, they move. And once they get a job, they move again, and they move again, and they move again. Till they retire, I feel like they keep kind of fluid, like they're all around the place. So you keep losing the friendships that you already had somehow. That's what I feel like it's the least favorite of mine, that I can't keep a friend here. Like in
because
my
for
life.
Them, it's very easy as well to move. It's like something they already accept as something they are going to do throughout their lives.
Exactly.
And in Europe, I have the feeling that people are more like, I'll probably just stay here or around here.
My own support system is here. I'm just going to stay here. Yeah, I live in Boston. I used to live in Chicago and I really love Boston. I used to love Chicago too, but I think Boston has this more European feeling to it. It kind of reminds me home. So everything is in moderation here, which I really like. So it's not like New York, crazy New York, or it's not like boring, you know, other states that I don't want to give names. So I think I love where I am right now, and I know I'm very comfortable. I don't want to move. Coming to the best thing about the states, I feel like I'm very independent here. In Turkey, it is hard to, for example, start your own business. I'm an artist and also an author. It's very difficult to, you know, buy supplies that are high quality for affordable price, or publishing your own book is a hassle sometimes. And, you know, those kind of independencies and ease and convenience is great in terms of being here. And I don't know your culture in Portuguese, but in Turkey, people tend to be a little bit judgmental of what
it's
you
the
do.
Same.
Yeah. So in America, I feel like, well, even though they're doing it very well, like secretly. So because I don't feel that way, I can wear anything I want in the street, or I can just, you know, freedom of speech is great. Like you can talk on Facebook about your, let's say, president, and you don't get jail time for that. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, those kind of things are great.
And what made you decide to stay in the United States? Was it something more specific?
I like United States. And I was in between at some point in my life around 2016. I was kind of torn between going back or staying. Honestly, neither looked great nor they looked horrible. So it was a very tough decision for me. But, you know, once you have a life somewhere and you kind of have a house, have furniture, have some connections, then it's very hard to make a big move again. So, and there were other financial reasons that made me stay in the States. And now I look back, I think I made the right decision and staying here because I wouldn't be able to build my own business or write my book this comfortably or this efficiently, I think, if I hadn't stayed.
Yeah, so it was a good decision in the end.
Yes.
It's curious because I was also a bit torn at some point, also when I had a breakup, and I kind of considered going back, but I don't think I've ever really considered going back, and I'm really happy that I didn't, because I conquered a sort of independence that I also think I wouldn't have conquered if I had gone back.
Yeah, right? Independence, yeah. It comes down to you, yeah, and me both. Yeah.
Fending for yourself and then learning to live all by yourself and to do your things, I wouldn't trade it for any, like, I really, like, I live now with my boyfriend, I really love it, but those years that I lived alone, they were still great years.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I totally understand you.
Great.
In your bio, or through your bio, I found out that you have worked as a DJ at a radio station. And that sounds like the coolest thing. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It was an amazing experience, actually. So it was between 2002 and 2008. I was a DJ at a national radio station in Turkey. We were playing like Hot AC. I don't know if you're familiar with radio.
Hot AC? No. Yeah. Hot AC.
So you can have AC, which is adult contemporary, so, or hot music, which is like Britney Spears that time.
Oh yeah,
not now, that's... obviously not. I don't know who's even, like, I would
Dua
say
Lipa maybe
Cardi
now?
B, for example, is a
Billie
hot...
Eilish.
Yeah, exactly.
Something.
But adult contemporary will be Rolling Stones, Deep Purple, you know, those kind of. So you combine those two, and you get my radio station, which was interesting because, of course, we are not playing Cardi B there because we were kind of a soft rock kind of radio station. So we would play Avril Lavigne for that time or Pink, which were like hot, but at the same time, AC kind of. So I did regular evening drive time shows, morning office shows. Overall, I think I learned a lot about music and people in overall. And you have to be aware of what's happening around you in the world. You have to be up to date. That was great because that was keeping me like, oh, I have to read newspaper today. I didn't read newspaper today. So you have to have a positive wording. For example, the year that I lost my mom, it's just my kind of scripts were a little bit dark. Okay, it may be raining today and we're all like, you know, moody, but you can look at things a positive way. And then my director came into my studio and says like, AJ, you're very negative. Maybe you should be careful about your wording. I'm like, okay, sorry. I didn't notice. Like, it's just, you know, sometimes you're a human being, you know, you have down days and you have like positive days. I'm usually a very upbeat person, but so you have to be careful because people are listening to you to be happy. So technically,
Sometimes the feelings come out even when you think you've hidden them.
Exactly. The words reveal themselves. I just didn't think that they would. But and of course, you have to avoid certain subjects and certain topics like politics, religion, you know, try not to. You have, if you want to give your opinion, you have to do it very, very smart way.
Was that easy? Did you find it easy to just at the time?
You mean like the hiding the subjects or?
Kind of like not talking about stuff that maybe you would like to talk about, but because you have that position in the radio station, you know that you're better off not giving an opinion.
I think it was, in the beginning, it was difficult. But once you kind of create your own brand, like people know you and who you are, and I believe in humor a lot. I'm a humorous person. So I would pick a song name, for example, just combining two what I just said, and they would understand that I'm talking about a political party. But it made me smarter, actually, trying to say something without exactly saying it, but yeah. Trying to give some hints or jokes or, I don't know, metaphors to say what you're saying. I think it was challenging, but it was fun. You know, that kind of tells who your listeners are, because they get you. And when you get me, I'm like, you're my best buddy.
You know who is supporting you as well. Yeah. And you took geological engineering degree and then an earth sciences degree. And then you just decided to do something completely unrelated to those degrees. Yeah. What happened there?
I love science. That's what happened. I have always thought I was very good at math and science in high school. I've always thought that's where I belonged. Even when I was studying in college, I was an honor student and I really, really enjoyed studying what I studied. But I also was very creative and always getting involved in projects that required communication, creating something, because I was really good at that. And so my left side of my brain and the right side were constantly at war. And finally, my right side won the creativity part, because during my master's at the University of Kansas, I realized geology was not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I love it, but I don't love it enough to be married to. It was like kind of love affair for a while. Because, you know, you either have to be in the field or in the lab and, you know, in front of your computer. It's a very lonely job. I felt like where I belong is more, I can use my strengths like creativity or communication or helping people. That was what was more attractive to me that time. So yeah, my path changed drastically.
And you were teaching English as a second language, which of course comes the people come yeah. in that yeah. interaction with the people. And you became a director of a school in Boston. Can you tell me about that experience? What I also have here, what did you enjoy the most and what was the most challenging about it?
Oh man, great question. So I served international education industry for 11 years. As mm-hmm. I said before, I was creative and really good at communication. So I quit the earth sciences path and started to teach English to international students, combining all the strengths that I just mentioned and you mentioned too. Once I moved to Chicago, I was promoted to academic coordinator position, which was a little bit more administrative than teaching. Mm-hmm. And I took a job in Boston as a student services manager, which was a high step up. And in the beginning of this year, I took the highest position in a school that you can get. I was a school director at ELS Boston. So what I enjoyed the most was meeting students from all around the world, helping them to realize their dream, because they come there to succeed in their careers, succeed in their schoolwork. Because if you want to, for example, improve in science, you have to read papers, more papers, as many papers as possible. And they're all in English. So, you know, that was kind of a milestone for them. And I was really happy to help them in any way that I can. I used to be one of them, so I knew how challenging it was, and I was really happy to help them. The challenging part of the job is you cannot get what you deserve in this industry. So you work really hard, you yeah. invest in a lot, you train teachers, admins, you organize events for students, you go out of your way to help them. For example, I used to be on call at the weekends to make sure our students would arrive their residences safely from airport. If a student or one of my employees were frustrated, unhappy, it needed to be taken care of swiftly with uttermost, you know, importance. So,
yeah.
But all the admins and teachers' pay were below national average, except CEOs and vice presidents of private schools. No one in education industry gets paid well. So, yeah.
It's something that people have been talking a lot now with COVID, because teachers have had to, in so little time, adapt to things, mm-hmm. having classes online, etc. And yet the pay is always so low, like in general for teachers, because like when you're a child, you kind of say, oh, I would love to be a teacher. But you have this idea that the job stops when everyone goes home. But there's so many things that teachers have to do after going home. that they have to prepare when they are already not in the school, that I really think it must be such a difficult job.
Yes. And, you know, I think, I don't know what you think, but a lot of people, if you ask anyone in the street, tell me about, you know, your favorite doctor or, you know, your favorite supermarket owner, they wouldn't say a name easily. But if you ask, well, who was your favorite teacher, they're going to tell you right away, because teachers play a very important role in our lives. Like they are a part of our growing up and how we shape our personalities, and they're getting paid so little. I really wanted this to change. Education is not given importance in anywhere in this world, in even most developed countries, and I don't still understand why.
Yeah, because they basically, when the kids are not at home, they're doing the job of the parents and more. Because the education is not just learning to write and do maths and etc. The education is also to make them good citizens to go out into the world. And so many people whose life kind of changes because a teacher trusted them. I've read this, now that I think about it, I read this book by Jaquira Diaz. It's called Ordinary Girls. And she talks about it, about how one teacher basically just changed her whole life that could have gone a really bad path. And they're so important, I think.
Agreed, 100%.
Mm-hmm. So, and with COVID, you had to stop with the lessons and you decided that it was the best time to focus on something that you also love doing. And you decided to create a business, a way to live from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Were you an artistic child? Is this something that comes or something that you developed with time?
Yes, I think, let me tell you very quickly how this COVID changed everything. So I do adjust well to the corporate world, but I have always wanted to work for myself, not for someone else, because mm-hmm. all that hard work, all the creative and smart ideas you come up with would go unnoticed or unappreciated most of the time. And it will be so hard to make a change for the better in your workplace, unless you're at the very high top in the administration. So I think that was always on somewhere in my mind. And when I was furloughed, I thought to myself, this is my moment. I can start my own business and create a business plan, take the first steps and see how it goes. So I started my art business and finally found a publisher for my book. And now I love being my own boss. Coming to your question about art, being an artistic child, I was an artistic child. My family used to tell me, at the age of 3, people wouldn't believe my paintings were done by a 3-year-old. I mean, I wasn't obviously a Da Vinci, but I was somehow above average in that sense. In middle school art class, my friends always would ask for my help. So teachers would understand, AJ, did you help your friends again? Because I'm exactly painting the same things like a copy machine. But then after high school, I started to have less and less time for art. I was still being creative in other ways, like writing a script for a radio program or making fun and creative gifts for my family and friends. But that was it. So it was 2017 when I finally stopped running and got more financially independent.
Mm-hmm.
I also fell in love. So I had a very caring and loving relationship, which you can feel more peaceful in it. So that was the time I finally could focus on my book and start writing again, and I could finally start thinking about more my art. Also, I started my personal blog the same year and making sketches at Starbucks, trying to improve my drawing skills on YouTube. So when the pandemic hit, I said, I will teach what I know to people who are interested because I have so much time in my hands now. So I created YouTube channel, Instagram, and my Patreon account to promote my art tutorials, helping artists to improve their art, just like me.
Were already busy doing art a few years back when basically you had like more the mental space and to start again. But this year you kind of went further in it with Patreon and YouTube, etc.
Yeah, and I was like spending more time on my art because even though 3 years ago I started, it was maybe once a month I was just drawing a realistic portrait and improving my skills. Huh, you know, let me try this different medium here and it's working or not. But this year I am doing at least 2 artwork a week. So it's just much more speeded up and requires more patience. Let me say that way.
And so. COVID did not stop your creativity. It just,
no, it right, actually that's great. Improved. I don't know why. I think I'll tell you in the next questions, but I think it improved me more.
That's great. And did you bump into a lot of difficulties? Was it a big investment or something that just sort of happened with the business?
It wasn't a huge investment in the beginning. I mean, technically you are doing art at home, so you have to only buy, you know, the supplies. But as it grew, it required more and more, especially in marketing and promotion side, more investment. So you do these good artwork, but the internet is oversaturated. You cannot get seen unless you run promotional campaigns and ads. So of course, there were some difficulties. For example, I used to film my tutorials with my iPhone. I would run out of space and it would stop recording without me noticing. Oh, so that 7-hour tutorial would go in waste.
So. Yeah, that's a nightmare. I mean, to start exactly. It all over.
Yeah, and I it was terrible. Then storage of my videos on my PC became a problem because my PC was slow, didn't have enough space, and my one video was like 28 gigabytes. So it would take a lot of space. So I had to buy extra space. I never thought about this before. And finally, I think the problem I came across is I run 2 separate businesses, like one for Turkey and one for English channel. So they are very different culturally. So the marketing and promotion changes, what they like, what they don't like in terms of art is very different. So the cultural differences made my promotion work very tricky. So
that sounds also like a lot of work to have to do.
Two of them, yes.
Yeah. Like,
I'm not gonna lie.
Because sometimes I think, like, also with podcasts, some people have podcasts in 2 languages, so they have like 2 podcasts, and there must be so much work as well to have to record one and then the other and kind of fit it to
different
the market
voiceovers. And yep, Instagram's 2 different Instagrams I'm running. Wow. They're 2, every post needs to be in 2 languages. It's definitely a challenging one.
Are you good at like staying away from the internet and scheduling what you have to do throughout the day so that you don't waste a lot of time and you have time to do everything? Because 2 Instagram accounts as well.
Good question. Here is the challenge. I am good at time management. I know exactly what I'm going to post, when I'm going to post. But even though I tried so many times, like writing on a piece of paper, okay, Monday, 11 a.m., post this. Like it never happens. So I'm being more realistic now. I'm working more like this needs to be get done by Wednesday, for example. I have more like deadline work now. It works better for me. But at the same time, because this is your own business, because you're not working for someone else but yourself, sometimes your hours kind of get really like intervene each other. Like, I don't know what time I'm going to bed. I found myself working till 2 a.m. last night. And why? Like, if I was working in a company, I would stop at 5 p.m. and just, I can't stop. I always think that I can do more. I can do more beautiful posts. I can make more challenging, let's say, competitions or giveaways. Like, I'm always researching too what others are doing, what my rivals are doing, right? Yeah. What other art channels are doing. So I have to always keep like working on these things. So although I do things on time and they're not burning me out yet, I feel like I'm overworking, to be honest.
But it's also something that maybe sometimes you lose track of time because you love it so much.
Yeah.
And it brings you joy as well. Although, a lot of things that bring people joy can become a bit overwhelming with time.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think it's still the beginning. I started my business in June. Mm-hmm. So it's still very new. I think once a year or 2 years passes, I think I will have more things in place.
Yeah.
I don't have to work this hard maybe, but you never know. This is me, you know.
Well, it's just the beginning of the business. Maybe who knows? Maybe next year will be more than just you.
Maybe.
Some support there. And did you have something to fall back to in case it this failed with the Patreon and the lessons, or was it basically a all or nothing kind of thing because maybe there wasn't like too much to lose anymore?
I had nothing to lose. Yeah,
because if you get, I know a lot of people who, for example, got laid off this year and they just decided to go into something else. So
I think, yeah, pandemic created such an interesting opportunity for people. I know it's been really, really hard on a lot of people. I was just one of the lucky ones that my boyfriend still has a job and, you know, we can pay our mortgage. So that's good. But at the same time, I'm very real, you know, aware of the fact that this moment was something that I was looking for in a very long time, because I finally have time to focus on what I'm doing. And I had the opportunity in terms of like cost of things, because I had some savings. So, you know, it wasn't terrible for me. But I understand for other people who are going through challenging times and they still don't have time, especially if you have a kid at home. It's a different story,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm also in favor of using the opportunity as it comes to you. I saw this as an opportunity instead of sitting at home and like looking for other jobs or trying to be feeling sorry for myself. I just saw that, you know what, I was looking for some break from my work and to focus on something that I always wanted to do. So give it a shot. I'm going to give it a shot. And as I said, it's not a big investment, because in the past, I was thinking about opening my own science STEM school, mm-hmm. actually STEAM school with art. but then, you know, that's a lot of investment. You have to rent a place. You have to buy furniture. You have to hire teachers. That was a lot of investment. And if it goes into waste, then you lose a lot. But with art from home, you know, I had nothing to lose. But also I knew I would succeed. Somehow I had never, Karina, I never felt this certain in my life about any other job. I still know that my business will get much bigger and I have a feeling that I'm on the right path. I never had this certain feeling. I'm a Capricorn. I don't know if you believe in astrology.
I'm a Capricorn too.
Yeah. We're always suspicious about things.
What's your birthday? Now I need to ask.
Christmas.
Oh, 25th?
Yeah.
I'm the 5th of January. So.
Oh, okay. That's great. So I don't know if you agree then, but we always question things. We are suspicious. What if this doesn't work? Plan B, plan C. Like, that's how my mind works. I want to be certain of things. I always have this like, maybe it doesn't work, maybe. But for this job, for this art business and my writing business, I have a feeling that I will succeed. I have this feeling. So I was thinking, if I do a plan B in case it failed, if I start a business with plans in case of a possible failure, I feel like I'd never succeed.
So you would just set yourself to failure by having a plan B?
Yeah. For this one, that's how I felt. For an entrepreneur, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
So I didn't do any plan B. I was like, if it fails, it fails.
I think something up.
Yeah. I mean, what can I do? Then I'm going to use my paintings like around my house. I'm going to hang them, enjoy myself. But yeah.
Yeah, because artists, that's the thing. Nobody can take away the joy that you get from making it. Even if it then turns out that it doesn't sell. So
yeah, same thing with my book too. You know, it's out there now. If people don't like it, I mean, which is very true, because even my favorite books, some people don't like them. So possible. But I put it out there. It's mine. And that's what I cared for mostly in the creative business.
Yeah, especially because with art in general, I think people never look at something and they never read a book by the book itself. Everybody reads the book differently.
Exactly.
And for some people, that book means a lot. For others, doesn't. But it's not. It's personal to the person who reads it, not to the author. So,
exactly.
And did it take you, still in the business side, like, did it take you some time to get profit or some sales in the lessons in Patreon?
Of course. Well, it's a slow business, so
I have no idea.
Business. Yeah,
I'm asking so that people who maybe are feeling a bit, let down, can have an idea.
Please don't feel let down, guys, because in order to get customers, for example, on Patreon, you have to get an audience first and build trust. So you should show, for example, for this trust building process, you should show, for example, consistency in your work in terms of quality and frequency. For example, if I post a video today and then for 2 weeks you don't hear from me, you're gonna get this feeling from me that, oh, you know, she's not very regular, or she's not consistent in her work. Or my quality, if it gets kind of dropped in time, then you're gonna feel like, oh, I don't wanna invest my money into something that I don't trust. So my YouTube, my Instagram and Facebook accounts have been creating this audience base for me since June. And I've just recently actually started to make profit from my Patreon, frankly. It is a long haul. Maybe five months have been. It is a long haul, as I said, and I heard that it is not realistic to plan on profit before 1 year.
Yeah.
So I think I'm on the right track, and it makes sense. Especially, I'm thinking about getting some YouTube ads as well, like commission from the YouTube ads, and it takes a certain amount of watch hours and subscribers. In order to get that base, again, it takes at least a year or a year and a half. So you are just stay in, don't give up, and keep up your quality, consistency, frequency, like, you know, whatever you set up from the very beginning, just don't give up. I know it's very difficult because you've been doing things and you're not getting anything in return, but it's going to pay off later. Trust me.
That's great advice. Just keep doing what you love, and then eventually people will love what you do.
Yeah, hopefully.
I had here a question about any tips or advice for people who want to start a business and, you know, are a bit lost in life and don't know exactly how to turn their passion into work, or how to just turn their passion into something they can do more often. Do you have any tips on that besides what you already said?
Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm not an expert, but I want to share my experience and what I see around me. So I would say, listen to what your heart is saying and what your mind secretly wants. Do not listen to others who feed your fear of starting. Many people, including friends and family, will reflect their own fears onto you. If there's something in you that really wants to start something, but you don't know where to start, just start small and start somehow. Start today. For example, let's say you have been wanting to write a book. I hear a lot from my friends, oh, I want to write a book too, but never had the time to sit down and start. For example, give only 30 minutes to yourself that day. Instead of watching Netflix, for example, sit down with a piece of paper and brainstorm. Create a mind map. What do you like writing about? Fiction, nonfiction? What audience do you want to write for? Adults or children? Do you like romance? If so, what kind? What kind of characters do you like? Do you like the present setting, future or past? Once you write these down, 30 minutes will already pass. Congrats, you started. So, you know, once you start, I think you can't stop. That's how I am. Like once I start, the door opens and then the flood comes in. So it keeps coming. If you want to turn your hobby into a business, though, it's a little bit different story because you need to learn business stuff. So hobby is different and business is different a little bit. Business stuff, including accounting, marketing, the tricks of creating social media posts, advertisements, reading the analytics of your page, web page creation. You need to have a web page, building your email list. All kinds of stuff that definitely you need to learn besides your creative part of work, but it is easy to learn. It's all out there for free for you guys. Like there are so many blogs, so many YouTube videos about how to start your own business. Definitely, if you want to do it, just don't find excuses and start today.
It can take time, but I kind of have the feeling that much of the work of researching, it's already done. Sometimes in one place.
We are in a very lucky time, I think.
Yeah.
Because 10 years or 20 years from before, like today, I think people didn't have this chance to go on YouTube and listen to success stories or failure stories from people so that they wouldn't make the same mistakes, or, you know, they would get this advice from these people. But now we have an endless resource that we can actually go in and see what worked and what didn't for other people. So I think we should take really good use of this and search for it. But I think it's all about time management. You have to just get started and keep doing it every day, piece by piece, consistently. That's it.
Yeah. And like, there's something that I noticed, that when I see your videos and stories on Instagram, you seem always so happy to be doing what you're doing. And there is so much joy in those posts. It's one of the things that kind of came out to me more, like when I was checking your profile and stuff. And is this something that is intrinsic to your personality, or is it specifically when you're doing art and when you're creating?
Actually, I think it's both. I'm generally a happy person. I get stressed out, of course, time to time, but I love life and I love people. So I think that affects me. But of course, loving what I do and the way I wanted to, I'm just working the way I wanted to finally, has an extra positive impact on me. So I think it's a combination of what I do and how my personality is. Also, when I'm watching my videos, I find myself smiling too. So I think that's working. Maybe this radio training that I got in the past helps me as well. Be always positive. Because, you know, you go and, I don't know, have a bad news that day, but I have to film an intro.
Yeah.
I have to still put a smile face. Mm-hmm. It's not faking, but at the same time, you're kind of forcing yourself to forget what you just heard and focus on your audience, because your audience doesn't have to go through what you're going through. Think about this. You are one person and I have 2,000 subscribers on my Turkish channel. If everyone watches that video, I'm going to make 2,000 people unhappy. They don't deserve this.
No.
So, I know. So I think they deserve a happy person smiling at them and giving them the art needs that they want during that 50-minute video. And that's what I'm doing. So
that's really great. Like, that's a great way to think of it. you said that you always wanted to write a book. And for this book, because that's the reason why we're here, it's because you wrote Frank. And you decided to write the book, and you illustrated the book as well, and it's finally out there. So tell us a bit about the book. What is it about, and for which age, more or less?
Okay. If I go like too much ahead, just let me know.
No.
When I'm talking about my book, I might just like lose myself a little bit. And talk
no worries. Just, of course. Just speak your heart.
Thank you. My book title is Frank, as you said. Frank is a sci-fi book for middle grade readers. Middle grade meaning in America, aging 7 to 12. The story of Frank is an interesting one. Frank is a gifted child with specific interest in science, but he has trouble making friends, a little bit socially awkward. One day he accidentally learns that he's adopted, and with how like 10-11 year old feels, he feels hurt, and he goes into his closet, which is a big closet full of everything he loves. With anger and frustration, he kind of throws his tablet at the wall, and suddenly this hole appears in the wallpaper. What happens though afterwards is basically he finds a tunnel, and at the end of this tunnel he meets Andy, and Andy is Frank's age. They become friends, and finally that wall comes down and they meet in person, Frank and Andy. What happens afterwards though, Frank realizes that Andy's house is the exact replica of Frank's, but everything is so different. They finally realize the reason. They belong to different universes. They complete each other. Frank and Andy are opposite characters. Frank is a science kid, and Andy has a cheerful personality, nothing to do with science, but he easily makes friends and, you know, he finds his way. He's also great at reading social cues. So in the end, they decide to go on a journey together to find Frank's biological parents in Andy's universe, because in Frank's mind, child mind, of course, like if my parents didn't want me in my universe, maybe they will want me in Andy's universe. So they go on this adventure in Andy's universe, but there are so many situations, dangerous situations that they have to overcome. And finally, of course, I'm not going to tell you what happens in the end.
No spoilers.
So the whole actually journey is about friendship, family, and also some other issues that people don't want to talk in general, how we can overcome these issues. And in the end, there's always, you know, something positive can happen. I wanted to encourage children. I wanted to encourage children in terms of science, in terms of family relationships and friendships. So I think that's the story of Frank.
There's one thing, like there's many things, but like there's one specific thing that I thought super cool when I read the book, because I'm obviously not a child, mm-hmm. but I like children's books still. And I kind of thought if I was like, I started reading about when I was about 9, 10, and I thought if I had picked up this book when I was a child, there's so much information here that I would just love to tell adults that I know, like, you know, that someone would say something and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that, because, and then like the book would be such a great source of information, of learning things, because there are so many facts in there that you learn. Like I'm terrible at maths. I'm like, I'm on the language side. I, as soon as someone says a number to me, my brain just shuts down. So I'm terrible at maths, but I loved when I read a book and they have this information, and there are things that I still remember to this day that I read when I was 11 about nature and other stuff like that. That I think this book has so many of those little things that must be such a joy for kids to be reading it, and being, they're reading this adventure story and they're learning these facts, that it's just amazing.
I'm so happy to hear that, Karina, because, you know, that was one of my purposes to write this book in a fun way, in the fun moment of these two friends, just, you know, putting that scientific fact there, how Frank thinks about that scientific fact and uses it. It just makes it more fun. It makes it like even look, I just wanted to make science look cool. And yeah. I think what you're saying is like, I succeeded in that. Thank you.
I think, I mean, like I said, I'm not a child, but my 10-year-old would be really pumped up to read all those things and to learn all those things into the story, and then just go and just put it into conversations.
Thank you.
With other people. That's great to hear. So that was really cool.
I'm so happy. And
this is a question that it may be a bit difficult to reply to, but how did the idea to write Frank come about, and what inspired you to write this specific story? Do you remember like a place or a time, or did the story just come to you bit by bit and you have no idea where it came from now?
Yes, I remember so vividly. It was winter time in 2017. I think it was November, not sure. I was at a bus stop and it was snowing that day in Boston. I was sitting at the bus stop waiting for my bus. I had been thinking about writing a book and writing a good story, but I just didn't know where to start. Even I was not sure about the audience. Do I want to write for adults? Do I want to write for kids? But suddenly when I was sitting at the bus stop, I just saw Frank in my mind very clear. Like, wow. This red hair, red giant red glasses with freckles. And he's like 10, he's very short, but 10 or 11 years old. I couldn't tell the age right away, but he was smiling at me and he was just like, you know, correcting his glasses. And I was like, oh, he's my character. I found my character. Okay. And he's a science nerd. That's how it came to my mind right then and there. And his name also appeared right away, Frank. So if some people ask me, why didn't you choose a female character, or, you know, a person of color, which are very good questions. Mm-hmm. And I really don't have, as a creator, I don't have a very good answer to that. I'm not forcing myself to create a character. It just happened to be there and it was just Frank. And I really wanted to go with that because it's the magic of your writing. The character comes to you and says like, okay, I'm waiting, write about me. You know, so that's how I felt like Frank was talking to me. I was like, hey, I know now you have me write about me. So I went to Starbucks the same day. I love coffee, by the way. And I went to on a table and just wrote maybe 4 or 5 hours straight till Starbucks closed. It was there, my story. Andy came later. And once I have Frank and Andy met, I knew the ending, but I didn't know how to get to that ending.
Oh, that's always the worst, isn't it? I always find that, like, I like write fiction to write fiction as well. I haven't written fiction in a very long time. But for me, it's you have points in your story that you know you want to include. And those are like high points in the story. But the trouble is, how do I find the little bits of information that I have to put in? Because this is a book. It's not a story I'm telling my friends. How do I get those bits of information that, like, the bridges that will connect all those major points to each other? That's
exactly
terrible.
Exactly. That was very interesting for me. Yeah.
Was it tough to kind of come up with all the rest? And
it, yes, I think difficult. It was difficult because of the consistency in the world that you create. And it was just getting there with the same consistency and also creating all these ups and downs, but then finally connecting them to where you want to connect. Yeah, it's tough, I think.
Did you write like those major points and then you went back to the rest? Or did you do like the timeline of the book? You started in one point and then you knew the end, but you wrote the middle all, you know, like bit by bit.
Yeah, I think so. When they start the journey, Andy and Frank, till what happened in the end, those required a few scenes, that different stories, bits of stories. Those were, I was thinking about what's next, what can I do next, where they can go next, what kind of situations they can face next. So that I made a list, yes. And I wanted to give them a realistic order, because it cannot, then if you do them too often, or if you do them like too apart, then it's not going to look realistic, or it might bore the reader. But also I love twists. So all these twists need to be there for me. And I was trying to decide where to put those twists in what kind of pace. So yeah, those, the journey part, I definitely wrote down to the steps. One thing I want to tell you, I don't know if you agree with me, most authors probably would agree with me, the worst part of your book, the most difficult, I think, part of your book is the ending, because you get really, I think in the climax part, you get really high and then suddenly it's like sugar rush. You feel really tired and you want to finish. So you just come to the ending of your book and you suddenly start rushing. So I realized that in me, and I went back and I unrushed myself. I don't know if that's a word, but I think that's a potential danger in every writer, because okay, it's like doing the art too. If you paint or you draw the face of the portrait, you did such a great job, the realistic portrait, the hair and the eyes and the nose. When it comes to clothing part, you're so burnt out, or you just want to finish, just like you rush through it, and you kind of suffer during the clothing part. So I felt the same way in the ending, because I wanted to have a perfect ending, because ending is so important. It's like a TV show, TV series, a movie. Ending is so important. Yeah. People were like, oh, that was a terrible book if the ending is terrible.
Because it wraps up it wraps everything up together. And of course, nobody wants to get disappointed either.
I know, exactly. So that was tough on me. I need to go back and it's like, AJ, don't rush, okay? You're writing the ending again. So that's how I kind of
Did you ever felt through the process that you had these ideas, but the way that kind of the characters and the story becomes alive, you are losing that? You are going into another track that is not the track you are trying to go to, and then you find it hard to get back on track to where you wanted to be? Because I kind of have the feeling that sometimes you have, again, key scenes, but your writing isn't helping you to get to that key scene.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yes, because it's very interesting. It's like organic. These characters kind of evolve in the story themselves. So they create this characters themselves. And as you know more as a writer, what if you ask me, for example, what Frank likes to eat or drink, I would tell you right away, because then you get to very familiar with your characters as your book evolves. But then you want to come to that key point, but then it's like, Frank wouldn't go there. Or like, I say like, oh, Andy would laugh at him here. Like, it wouldn't work as scary as I wanted to, or you know what I mean? Like, so it's just, you're right. I think it's some key scenes I kind of didn't do. I was going to add more actually. And then I realized that it had to be during the 1 day period and instead of like days or weeks, those kind of things that you had to make decisions as you go. Okay, I decided on this scene, but it's not going to fit my characters anymore, or it's not going to fit my timeline anymore. Yeah. So I'm just going to put in trash. You have to be able to let it go. I think that's another challenge for writers, that it's hard to let it go because you've thought about it and you think it's really cool. But if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit. What can we do?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I agree. It's one of the things that you wrote, even if you write something and then you know that doesn't work with the rest of the text, but you don't want to take it apart. You don't want to tear it down there because you wrote it and you really like that, but it completely ruins the whole text. So you just, yeah, that's true. You got to let it go. Tough process to learn. And did you have a schedule or did you write as inspiration came about? Which maybe this is a bit of a silly question for me to ask, because most writers do say, yeah, you can't wait for inspiration. You just have to sit down and make it come to you. But how did it work? Because how long did it take you to write the book?
I think it was 2017 November when Frank talked to me. Yeah. I think 2018 March I had finished it. So 2-5 months. Every morning, 4 to 5 hours. I used to work in the evenings then, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. in a school. So every morning, 5 hours, I would work on my book, and every weekend, 7 hours per day, probably.
Wow, that's full time.
That's a full time one, yeah. And I couldn't stop. It was so much fun. I felt like writing my book felt like I was reading a book, but in a more fun way, because I was creating it. So I couldn't stop. That was the moment that I just kept writing, and that was great. I don't know if I'm going to have that moment again. Honestly, I'm working on my second book ideas right now. I have two. Wow. But then I don't have the same energy, or I would say time to dedicate right now. So we will see how it goes.
I guess we'll talk about it when they're out. Again. Just putting it out there.
Yeah, sure. I would love it.
And without spoilers, or without a lot of spoilers, what was your favorite scene to write?
Well, difficult without giving spoilers here. No. I don't mind, really. I think the section that Andy and Frank meet Ada in the forest village, I could write a whole book about Ada. I liked her so much. I think that was one fun scene. Also, there was a conversation at the treehouse when Andy and Frank were watching the stars. That scene, that conversation has a special place in my heart. So I think I enjoyed it a lot.
See, there isn't a lot of spoilers. Now people, of course, now people to understand, they will have to read it. But that's the point. What did you find the hardest about writing this book?
Where to start? So I'm not a native English speaker, as you can tell. So writing...
Not really, to be honest.
Thank you. But I mean, to be honest, when you are writing, the story is there and it comes to you in like a movie or in pictures and you're writing it down. I had a very difficult time in explaining gestures, because how do you explain this? Like, you know, specific, like...
You're going to have to do it because people can't see you.
Yeah, I
can see you, but they can't.
See, I can still explain. So your hands are on your hips and you're just like, you know, looking frustrated, but you don't want to say frustrated. You want to show, not tell.
Yeah.
So I just want to, I really improved myself in that. I know all the gestures now, I can tell you, but that was difficult. But at the same time, except me as an author in general, I think there are main difficulties such as creating believable characters, because you're writing about an 11 years old. You are not, I was 27 years. It's been 27 years. I was 11 years old and I was never a guy. So I don't know, honestly, how to write from an 11 years old year old's mind. So you have to do a lot of research and observation. Mm-hmm. You have to read other middle grade books, or you have to observe your friends' children, you know, or children around you, to see what they would actually think in that part or of the life, or what they wouldn't. You know, this was an interesting research for me. Another one is POV, the point of view, deciding mm-hmm. on the point of view. I think it's so important. Who's going to tell your story? If Frank tells you the story, would that be more effective? Or if some outsider would tell the story as a whole, would that be more effective? And think about this. A child will read this. How much, because adult and child is different in terms mm-hmm. of, again, which one would create a greater impact in terms of point of view. So that was challenging, because if it's, for example, Andy's point of view, how come he knows how Frank is feeling? Because he was like, yep. Frank was frustrated. Okay, how come Andy knows Frank was frustrated? You know, those kind of things that you have to really think about. That was challenging.
What do you want to focus on as well? If you want to tell everything, or if you want to focus on the point of view of one character in specific.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is there anything that you consider was the easiest part of writing the book? If there is an easiest part at all.
I think the most thing, the thing is, if you're a reader, if you like to read, I think it's easy to get lost in the story and end up writing pages and pages. That's how I was working, as I said, 7 hours. So once you create the scene in your head, it is easy to put it down on paper. I think it's more difficult to go back and edit those story in a more believable, more realistic way. Because if you're reading a lot in your free time, especially fiction, you kind of have already this interesting pathway in your brain that, you know, how it goes. Oh, I need twists, or I need a cliffhanger at the end of the chapter, or I need character development in the very beginning. Oh, I have to grab attention of the reader in the first 10 pages. If you know these things already, because you read a lot, then it just comes easy. But what comes to difficult part, as I mentioned before, writing this in a more believable way and more mm-hmm. consistent way, I think.
And what is your goal with Frank? Like, what do you expect to achieve? And this is a very broad question. So it can be in terms of personal satisfaction, professional, monetary. What do you want to reach or to do with Frank?
So every author, our books are our babies, right? So every author wants to be the bestseller. Every mm-hmm. author wants to be J.K. Rowling, or, you know. not personally. Not as a person.
Just to put it out there, just to make sure people know that.
not like personally. I meant bestseller.
No, I understood.
So I'm being very realistic. It takes time for a book to become bestseller unless you have strong connections. So it's marketing and promotion takes months, if not years.
Yeah.
So think about it. You buy a book from bookstore. That's how I am. But I still have to finish what I'm currently reading. Three months later, I start Frank. But life happens and I can't finish it right away. 2 months later, I'm done with the book. I really like it, but I don't do anything about it, even though I really like it. A few months later, my nephew's birthday comes, and I remember Frank was a great book, so I give it to him. Do you see how slowly it progresses?
Not to mention that the things that we actually reach to in bookstores, they all depend on publishing. Because most people, I have the feeling that a lot of people think that what you read is just a coincidence, that kind of the book chose you at the bookstore or something, but it's not. Because if you go to a lot of bookstores or even the library, things are put in a certain way for you to pick certain books.
Yeah, I know.
So
it's So yeah, I definitely want to be successful, of course. I want people to like my book and get the message that I'm trying to give there and like Frank and Andy as much as I like, but I'm not doing the book publishing for financial reasons, to be honest. None of the writers, I don't believe any author starts writing books to make money. I think writing books is just to put your story out there and use your creativity. It's just like an urge. Like, I need to give this story to people. And then you just give it to people. And then you already think about, oh, okay, I'm not going to make money out of this, but let's see what happens. Every author has a part-time job anyway, or a full-time job. So,
And it's out of your hands. Once it's out in the world,
yeah, it's
it's out of your
theirs.
hands.
Like, whatever they make out of it. But also, book is evergreen. It's not something that you consume and you just burn it, right? It's there on your shelf, or you give it to someone else and then give it to someone else. That's what I like about books. It's always there and somebody is reading it, and somehow your message will come across to someone. I think that's a great part of writing a book. But I want to mention, I think it can be a really good Hollywood movie. So if any producers listening to us, I suggest they have a look at Frank's story
Yeah, look at
because
it.
because
I think actually, yeah, a lot of the scenes there, and it's curious because I think the story comes very much alive because of the illustrations. Because you chose the illustration that you chose to make for it, they're very colorful. So they really, like they come alive in the story. Like even the if you see the cover and the colors and everything. So yeah, I think if it was a movie,
Yeah.
it would just, yeah, it would just leave. It would just
I thank you
come
so much.
alive.
I also want to mention that it's not colorful in the print
Oh
book.
yeah, that's true, because I
Yeah.
got
But
a digital.
ebook has the colors. Unfortunately, I wanted to do the print ones with colors, but they said that probably you would lose money if you and it's 16 pages of, I think, colored illustrations made by me, and also someone else that I hired kind of digitalized it for me. So that was great. But yeah,
Because
they are,
sorry, you do everything on paper.
I did everything on paper, and like I drew my art and I took pictures of it and I sent it to Uhala. It's who I hired. She's great. I highly recommend her if you're looking for a digitalizing artist. So she took those and she make them more, I would say, professional looking, because mine was like colored pencils and ink. I mean, it would look original probably, but I wanted it to look more professional than original, to be honest. So that's how it came alive.
Yeah, because I ask because a lot of illustrators do a lot of illustration on paper, and then they use like an app or something on iPad or whatever device they use to digitalize it. But a lot of people also immediately draw on the on a digital surface. So that's why I wanted just to make it clear if it was really an illustration that you made on paper or if you immediately did it digital, but it was on paper and then was digitalized later.
Yeah, no, I put it on paper. Actually, I'm gonna show you after this and you can see, but nobody can see, so
No, I can share it on Instagram or Twitter because I have the social media for the
oh.
podcast and I can always do that when the podcast comes out. No problem.
Awesome.
That'd
That's
be
great.
great, actually. Then I
Okay,
can
sure.
also link to the illustrate to the person who digitalized in case someone is looking for it. Because yeah, the illustrations, like I said, in the digitalized, I really like books in print, but the digitalized version is really cute with the illustrations in yeah in the middle with color. So it's really
Yeah,
cool, and it's
thank
really
you.
cool that you just did everything, like both the drawings and the writing.
Thank
That's
you.
really nice. One last question. It was really nice talking to you. And where can people find you online? And what's the best way to reach out to you?
Sure, I am very active on social media, so they can reach out to me by my author page or my art page, AJ Gürler Art or AJ Gürler Author, is my Instagram handle. And also I'm on Twitter with AJ Gürler Art again. But my website is the best place to reach out to me, my name and last name.com, www.ajgürler.com. There's a contact page there. You can fill out just little part there and just like send any email that you want to me. And also my email address is contact@ajgürler.com if they're interested. And YouTube too. If you are interested in art, definitely follow me on YouTube, ajgürler art.
I will make sure that I leave all of the links on the show notes so that people can actually read them as well.
Oh, perfect.
Now, this is a question that I ask everyone. It's always the last question of the podcast. And of course, this is a bookish podcast. And I would like to know an all-time favorite book and the book you would recommend right now.
Okay, the first question probably people don't like because it's hard to pick a book in
I know,
your life.
Right? Imagine me asking me this from people. I know.
So I'll be not, it's not going to be a classic or it's not going to be something you would expect, just telling you, because
I'm not really a fan of classics, so I prefer contemporary.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I have trouble reading classics for some reason. They tend to bore me for some reason. I can listen to them in audiobook. It's true. I can say this because it's the truth. I can listen to them in audiobook. But for example, I remember listening to 1984, and there was a bit there in which he talks about some loss. And I was thinking, if I had to read this, I would just, as we say in Portuguese, read it diagonally, because I would not read this properly because I don't have patience for so much information that doesn't seem to add a lot to the story to me personally. So
that's
classics.
Very true. So actually, about 1984, there was a big chunk of a letter there that I had to skip.
And I love the book. Like, I really love the book. But that part, I was like, yeah, I'm glad I got the audiobook. And yeah, with classics, I tend to give up on them because of that. Because somehow they just don't get caught my attention. So I prefer contemporary. So you can choose whatever, like really just a book that says something to you, even if it's not like the most beautiful book you've ever read, but just something that says something to you.
Sure. Although I write fiction, I'm a huge fan of nonfiction because I love learning about different things. So I think I would say Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari was I think it broke many grounds for me, and I really changed my thinking after that book, which is very rare. You know, people don't change their thinking after a book. Usually they start questioning things, but they don't change, but I did. So I think that was, I read it 3 times. So I think that is something. Like, yeah, did I miss a line? I want to go back and read it
but
again.
I also think it's a book that you need to read more than once. There are a couple of books of nonfiction that you do have to read them more, because it's so much information. Even if it's like a short story of humanity, it's a lot of information to retain in one read, I think.
And Sapiens had like this collection of history, anthropology, and futuristic, and also psychology. Everything that I am interested in was in one book. That's what I really, really enjoyed it, I think. Yeah.
And the book you would recommend right now?
I'm currently reading, and I'm going to recommend one more book. I'm currently reading Missing Colors by Lana Ondorf. She's my friend, and she just published a book as well. And I'm reading it, and I'm loving it. So I highly recommend. But I recommend also Born a Crime by Trevor Noah.
Oh, yeah. That's the best. Sorry.
It really touches upon the race issue in a very, very sincere way, and also a relationship with family. And he's so funny. One moment you laugh, and the other moment you cry. And I was like, this is a roller coaster.
Just like, I found the best about that book is that he is capable of making you laugh about absolutely terrible things. Like, he's telling you something that is really terrible. It's like, it's the worst, and yet you're just crying laughing.
Exactly. I know. And I know exactly what you're thinking right now. Who the, yeah.
Yes, that part with his friends dancing, which is great because it builds up. You see it building up. You're like, he hasn't even finished the scene, describing the scene. And this is, of course, the scene when they are at the Jewish school, and his friend is called Hitler. And you see it like happening as he is telling, even before he finishes, you're already, oh my
exactly.
God.
Exactly.
Oh
yeah.
God. Yeah. But many other scenes with his mother as well and in dangerous
situations.
Yeah,
that was very touching. Yeah. And very realistic as well. I felt like I was in the moment and I could see what was going through his mind. Mm-hmm. I think, although it's not astonishing the written book, I would say it's just very real and sincere book, and it never bores you and you want to know more and more. I felt like I was born there and I was kind of going through, you know, him and his grandma, like all those stories that made me really laugh. So I think that was, and I found something about my childhood too, because it's just very similar. We were like an average family, middle class family, so it was interesting.
I was just a bit, it's not disappointed, but I thought he was going to talk more about his career, like what happened after he got his career as a comedian and etc. But he did not. He kind of stopped at the beginning of his
I think he did it on purpose. I think he wanted attention to stay on the mother issue, and then he just like dropped it there. That's how I felt, because I was like, so, and then he's like, oh, and I'm on to United States, bye-bye. And I'm like,
I was like, wait a minute, you're not finished, man.
Yeah, I know. How did you go there from South Africa? What happened?
Yeah, and there was that. But I kind of hope, I hope that he puts out a new book, a new biography talking about that. But yeah, like you said, he did give focus to his life and how he was born, because it's called Born a Crime. So it was more to his life. But yeah, it was definitely, when I've listened to it as an audiobook, and it was really good, read by him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
I can tell you're into audiobooks a lot.
I love audiobooks. It's like, I don't know if you listen to audiobooks.
No, I have not yet.
But I have a friend who actually, she heard me talking about audiobooks on Facebook and how much I love them. And she paints, but she never managed to focus to listen an audiobook while she was sitting, for example. But then she started to listen to audiobooks while painting. And she says, now I can read like quite a few audiobooks a week while I'm painting, because I just put the audiobook to play like on my headphones or something while I'm doing my art. So for me, it was very happy. I was very happy about it, because I also started listening to audiobooks. I think it was actually when I started running, which I don't anymore. I gave up running after a few weeks, but it helped focus on something else while I was running. And before that, I was actually reading, listening to radio drama and comedy. So it became easier for me to kind of leap to audiobooks, because comedy and drama has more voices, so it's easier for you to focus. So when you leap to audiobooks, you're more used to listen to people, even when it's just one voice. And I cycle to work every day, 1 hour, so 30 minutes each way. And I can, like, I just listen to audiobooks and it just makes it so enjoyable. I love audiobooks. I will never stop talking about my love for audiobooks.
I was going to say, I think my point was kind of hesitance was like, is it one person's single voice? And what if I don't like their accent? Or what if I don't like their voice or how they tell this story? And, you know, is it like, for example, also, is it British English, American English? Like how, and... I think there's only single voice reading the book, right? It's not.
Yeah, well, depends. There are a full cast a book sometimes. Yeah, like for example, I think you have for Agatha Christie, Sherlock Holmes, etc. Other books that you have a full cast reading. And for example, Neil Gaiman has a few of his books.
I love him.
Yeah, me too. So, and he's got a few of his books turned into radio dramas from BBC Radio 4. Like, New Omens that he wrote to Terry Pratchett, and Nancy Boys, I think, was Stardust. There's another one that I forgot, but it's got quite a few, and then it's a whole cast.
Wow.
And they're not reading the book. They're actually acting out the books. But then
wow.
when you want to read the book, for example, it's a lot easier because you know the story acted out and you go to the book.
Amazing.
The other one is Neverwhere. And it's with James McAvoy and Benedict Cumberbatch is really good. But you kind of learn to get used to it, I think. Of course, it's not the same for everyone. Some people can't really focus on it. But I have a friend, for example, that she has ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And she has trouble reading, sitting to read. So she listens to audiobooks. Because it's her way to listen to audiobooks and to be able to read a book. But if you don't like, for example, you have samples. If you go to Libre FM, they support indie bookstores. So if you're going to buy an audiobook or to try out, I would advise Libre FM. They give you a month free as well. So one credit that you can buy. You can buy an audiobook. And the audiobooks always have samples. So if you listen to the audiobook and you don't like the voice, if you listen to those 4 minutes and you don't like the voice, you can choose another audiobook. It's always a possibility, and you'll find many nice ones that you like. I have two. I have one that is Libre FM, and then the other is Storytel. But Storytel, it's different. Storytel is a little bit like Netflix for books. So you pay an amount every month, and then they have a certain selection of books, which is pretty good. They have a lot of books available. And then Libre FM, you pay $15 each month, and you can buy one book with that credit.
Oh.
Like, for example, the Obama book, I don't think, because I don't really read nonfiction very well, but I love listening to nonfiction. So audiobooks are great for nonfiction.
Oh, okay.
And you just try it out and you see if you like it. And
yeah,
so there isn't a lot to lose.
Yeah, I know. No. Definitely, I should try. Now
I
you
hope you'll give it
me.
A try. Yeah.
Because
I'm all for audiobooks. So, and nobody come at me and say that audiobooks aren't the same as reading. I will fight you. Because that's an ableist idea. Because like I said, some people cannot read books for whatever reason. And the story is there. You just get the story in your mind anyway. So
definitely.
Go
I will try.
Books.
I'll give it a try.
This was already like, the interview was great. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. But like, just the fact that I'm convincing you to listen to audiobook, it's just great.
Thank you so much. You know,
it was
a great interview. You asked so many questions that I've never been asked before, which kind of reveals, I think, the whole backstory of my book and art business. Thank you so much.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you for wanting to be a part of it, and super interesting life story as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can access all of today's show's notes via my pod page, which you can find along with all of my social media links at linktree.com/Karina Pereira. I'd also like to give a shout out to Libre FM, which has been a great support for my podcast and Instagram account with their Advanced Listening Copies program. And I'm happy to announce that I have a brand new special offer for listeners. By becoming a new Libre FM member, you can get 2 audiobooks for the price of one, which is $14.99, with your first month of membership. All you need to do is use the code A Story of Sorts at checkout. That's A Story of Sorts, all small letters and all together. Libre FM has more than 215,000 audiobooks available, including bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers. When you purchase audiobooks from Libre FM, you are supporting independent bookstores and the whole community. This offer is for now only available in the US and Canada. Hopefully, Libre FM will be able to reach Europe with all these offers soon. You can use Libre FM anywhere in the world. As you have listened today, I love audiobooks. I will always share my love for audiobooks with others, and I particularly love the way Libre FM works and how they do so much more than just selling audiobooks. They use their platform in amazing ways, so check them out. If you have enjoyed this episode, don't forget to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For regular updates on what I'm reading, follow my Instagram page at A Story of Sorts. I'll be back with a new episode on the 2nd of February, this time with Esme the Heer, with some tips on how to start your own book club, including online. I'll talk to you then, and thank you for listening.